Anybody recognize this tune? Who is it? Who is it?
David Bowie.
David Bowie and Freddie Mercury and Queen. One of the greatest pairings of all time, arguably. I mean, so good. Under Pressure. This week we're going to go behind the curtain in our Summer of Sound series. We've been talking about music and sound and the ways that it can impact us, the ways that it can get us out of our head and into our bodies, and out of our bodies and moving into action. And this week we're going to go behind the curtain of musical beauty, and we're going to ask what it takes to make something difficult look so effortless. It's how I often feel whenever I hear some of our amazing musicians that we have perform here. You can tell, can't you, when a musician has taken the time and has invested the hundreds, the thousands of hours into their craft. And I'm reminded that what we see is just the most beautiful parts, the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. We're not seeing below that all of the hard work that went into learning and growing that skill. Diane Penning and Henry, her son, both classically trained artists with us this morning, both with remarkable careers. Music teaches all of us how to show up under pressure. Because the truth is, what we practice is what we become. That is true in music, and that's true in life. And this morning, we're going to kind of dance a little bit in both worlds. We're talking about music in the Summer of Sound, but these are principles that go beyond just music and go into other areas of our life. Because when we are under pressure, the real rubber meets the road. The things that we have spent time developing and instilling and working on are the things that emerge. Not our best and most wishful thinking of the way we wish we would be under pressure, unfortunately. Because most of us are practicing things that we would never intentionally sign up for. We asked a question this morning in pre-talk, and I found this quite enjoyable. Before I say that, there's a question I'll frequently use in icebreakers, like in a new room. And that question is, what is one thing you think you can do better than anyone else in the room? Usually it's 15 or 20 people. So it's a good icebreaker. I learn about skills or jobs or weird habits or things that they can do with their eyeball or their nose or something like that. And I like that question. Because the question we asked in pre-talk is, what is something that you have become excellent at, maybe without even realizing it or intending to? Dick claims to be a world record dishwasher stacker and organizer. He claims to take anyone on in this skill set. And he started out by talking about how this is something he does now. But then he later on went on to share his origin story about the first time that he was in a large commercial kitchen with a 30-foot dishwasher. And he explained the process of loading the dishes on and the certain ways they had to do it. And he claims, I still want to see this, that he could almost like blow and just like make these dishes just go into the right spots, and that everyone would drive from hours around to see his skill at work. This is all according to Dick. What is something that you've become intentionally or unintentionally good at without even realizing it? So we have something else coming up here, a cardboard boat race. And last year, there were a handful of us in this room who became unexpectedly good at building watercrafts out of cardboard. If you were part of that group, raise your hand really high, tall, and proud. Look at these cardboard mariners that helped us paddle to victory. Unfortunately, my co-captain from last year, Mary Ellen, is not going to be able to participate this year, but we have a new co-captain, John Leitner. Where's John at? There he is back there. He's this year's cardboard co-captain. This was something that was really, really fun because we bought the book and it was so enjoyable to see some of these bright engineering minds. I mean, we've got some really smart engineers and retired engineers here in this room, and it was fun to see them apply all this engineering expertise to cutting cardboard and pulling out these angles, and we were doing complex math, converting decimals to fractions, and my head was hurting. There's things in life that we become unintentionally good at without even meaning to. And the thing about practice, the thing about showing up under pressure, is that there is, for the most skilled of musicians and artists, this illusion of effortlessness. The best musicians make it look like it just flows out of them. And we struggle because whenever we start something new, we feel the disconnect between how we want ourselves to be or sound and where we're actually at. Somebody else mentioned learning Spanish this morning and how they studied and was in classes and then they started talking to peers. But there's a big difference between learning Spanish in a classroom and out of a book and tapes and online courses and going to a Spanish-speaking country. And then the first time you're there, you're all of a sudden reminded, oh, this is what it feels like under pressure. And we've all learned that in anything that we've become good at, because anything worth doing well will push us down and we'll find ourselves facing the dirt and have to pick ourselves back up and keep going. And we'll have to do that dozens and hundreds and thousands of times. Great music can feel like magic because the labor, the work, is not visible. We see the fruits of the labors. We don't see the hours of repetitive practice. We don't see the late nights. We don't see all of the discouragement, all of the comparisons, all of the internal struggles and the voices. We, the audience, we see grace. We don't see scales. We hear beauty. We don't hear and see the years of repetition. What looks effortless is almost never effortless, and that's true in life. Somebody else mentioned the World Cup going on right now. And I can sometimes, if I dream, imagine myself being able to kick the ball like those players. But any time I've ever attempted to do anything close to that has been far less impressive because it takes a lot of work and a lot of repetition and a lot of practice. It's the visible tip of an invisible life. Pablo Castel is the cellist. He practiced 4 to 5 hours a day into his late 90s, and when he was asked why, he said, because I think I'm actually making some progress. Many would consider the Beatles one of the greatest groups and to have come into the rock music world. And any Beatles purists knows and would tell you that what we hear as the Beatles didn't just emerge out of nowhere. It actually was forged in this difficult time in Hamburg, Germany, when they first got together and would play at these bars and strip clubs in the red light district of Hamburg, Germany, sometimes 8 hours a night to audiences who weren't even listening, who couldn't even pick any of them out of the room and didn't know them. And somewhere in those hours and in those thousands of forgettable nights, 4 mediocre teenagers became the Beatles. And when we watch the documentaries and when we listen to the Beatles, again, we're seeing the fruits. We're seeing the invisible tip, or the visible tip of an invisible life. Because the best things take time. I would dare say that especially in this world, this may be a controversial take, I think talent is overrated. I don't think what we're drawn to is necessarily talent. Now, yes, there's no matter how much practice I do, I recognize I will never be a World Cup player. I don't have the physical proportions. I don't have the younger body required to do the kinds of things, no matter how much I practice. And so I recognize that there is some inherent talent that's required, but I think talent is overrated. I think what we're drawn to is something deeper, because a lot of practice is boring, it's repetitive, it's lonely, and it's not glamorous at all. We actually love the idea of discipline more than the actual inconvenience. Because talent is overrated, but practice is also romanticized. I'll give you those two controversial takes. Talent is overrated, but before anyone knew the Beatles had spent years playing in strip clubs in this red light district, they were playing to people who didn't know them. And practice is romanticized because we think that it's so easy and it's going to lead us to something else. Point two is that the structure actually sets you free. As you practice and as you learn anything, and this is true of music and true of life, you first start out by learning the rules, learning the theory, playing the scales. We don't, unfortunately, start, as much as we would like, going right to the things that sound like we want it to sound. We have to play these unglamorous things to be able to learn to condition ourselves. We have to learn the structure. This is true of any skill in life. Learn the rules before you can break them. Learn the structure. But then once you learn the structure, then the structure sets you free. Because a good musician can learn how to take scales and chords and turn them into music and art and combine them with a story. Musicians know how to do this. You don't suddenly become calm, embodied, and expressive under pressure unless you have practiced calm embodiment and expressiveness before the pressure arrives. One of the quotes that's in our bulletin has been said a lot: we don't rise to the level of our expectations, we'll fall to the level of our training. This is not a self-talk, feel bad on ourselves kind of a talk. This is just the reality of the way the world works, that unfortunately the things that require the most of us will take the most from us. They require time and intention and effort. We don't rise to the level of our expectations, we'll fall to the level of our training. Because when it comes to pressure, and musicians face this, I would say any artist faces this, especially if you're in a performing art structure. If you're going in front of an audience and giving a piece of yourself, reciting a poem, a meditation, a talk, a piece of music, you're putting a piece of yourself out there. And that pressure doesn't create character. It actually reveals what was being built during that time when we were practicing. It reveals our conditioning. As a former pastor coming out of the world that I came out of, I was trained to have answers, to have the answers to the questions that people wanted to know. And I was trained to have those questions or to have those answers and to embrace certainty. And deconstruction for me was realizing that I had practiced certainty more than I had practiced curiosity. Like many people in the spiritual world, they get stuck within the structure and never move past the structure. And that's the difference between a musician who can play a piece of music flawlessly but without heart and character. Who can sing something technically perfect, but hasn't learned to explore with curiosity, hasn't learned to improvise and add their own level to what happens. Curiosity trumps certainty every time. And finally, performance is about presence. This I do think is true of any of the great concerts, musicians I have heard. What I remember and what I connect with is that artist's presence on the stage. We talk about stage presence in the same way that we talk about bedside manner with doctors. You either have it or you don't. You're good at it, and people talk about it, or you just struggle. And there are certain artists, aren't they, that can convey a presence, and they bring a presence to their arts. Great music can feel like magic because the labor has disappeared. And we, the audience, we see this grace and not the scales. This gentleman right here, anybody recognize him? Rick Rubin, one of the arguably greatest producers of the last 50, 60 years, has worked with artists across genres. He co-founded Def Jam Recordings, and he helped to shape early hip-hop, producing albums for the Beastie Boys, Public Enemy, Johnny Cash, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Adele, Jay-Z, Slayer. You can see he danced across a lot of genres. And he was well known and still is known within the music industry that no matter what artist you are, what type of genre you perform in, if Rick Rubin produces you, he's going to pull something out of you you didn't know was there. All the artists who have worked with Rick described his process as not adding something to that, but actually pulling something out from the artists. And he wrote a book called The Creative Act, A Way of Being. It's less a technical manual and it's more a spiritual reflection on creativity. Because for Rubin, the artist's real work, according to him, isn't just making things. And I would encourage any of you, if you have any artistic expression in any form or fashion, whether it's hobby or just pure fun, you can pick up this book. There's, at the end of every chapter, great creative exercises to help bring out things from you you didn't know was there. And his premise is that the artist's real work isn't just about making things. It's about becoming the kind of person who can listen and notice and practice and respond. He says, living life as an artist is a practice. You are either engaging in the practice or you are not. It makes no sense to say you're not good at it. It's like saying, I'm not good at being a monk. You are either living as a monk or you're not. Don't talk about how good you are. He says, we tend to think that the artist's work, or the artist's work is their output, the visible part that we see. The real work of the artist is a way of being in the world. And this is true for each and every one of you because I do believe that there is a seed of art and creativity in each and every human being. Maybe yours has been tamped down through years of not believing yourself capable of things. And maybe your gift is not going to be performing on a stage or with an instrument, but there is a seed of creativity within each and every one of us that can be nurtured. And the real work of the artist is a way of being in the world. I want to invite Henry and Diane to come back up on stage, and I want to just take a few minutes, actually, as we prepare to transition to just a couple more songs. And I want to actually ask them a couple questions about what creativity and practice have yielded for them. And I'll start let's see here. I'll let you decide which one of you want to take this question. But can you remember a moment in your performance where pressure changed the way that you performed, either for better or for worse? And what did that moment teach you? So a time in your career as a performer when you were under pressure of some sorts. And how did that pressure affect the performance? How did that pressure affect you as an artist?
Yeah.
We'll go to Henry first.
Just any time I was doing something I had never done before, whether it was a new song or working with someone I had never worked before, it happens over and over and over again, being under pressure. And at first it really scared me, and I would be stressed out the day before or the week before just thinking about it. Until I learned that you can practice, it's everything we're talking about, you can practice how to be in the same way that you practice your instrument. If you want to learn a fast passage of music, you have to become relaxed and play it very slowly so you can, when I was a kid, I learned the Beethoven Pathetique Sonata, which is like this really fast, flashy thing.
As did we all.
And I always wanted to just bust through it and like play it, and I did not like practicing slow. My piano teacher would beg me just like get the metronome out and do it really slow. And so I was always practicing it frantic and rushed and hurried. And so when I would play at my recital, that's the energy I would walk up to the piano with and just be like. And it wasn't until I went to college that I finally would really learn. That's how I learned how to play it feeling relaxed, and then I could play it fast. I can't anymore because it's not in my repertoire. But so I didn't, if I'm going to keep performing, I can't become stressed out for a week every time I have a performance. I will just be in a constant state of stress. So I had to learn to just slow down my thoughts and practice becoming calm all the time. Especially before performance. And I slowly got better at it. And I would practice going through the process of saying, wow, I feel really nervous right now. Even right before going on stage, I feel really nervous. Okay, let me just feel what it feels like to be nervous from an objective perspective and slow it down until I can just kind of see where it is in my body and practice letting it melt out. And then you just get better and better at that. And then under pressure becomes just an opportunity to practice something again.
I love that. Thank you. Diane, what is something that after years of practice has become freer for you or easier for you that in the beginning wasn't?
Well, I've been performing for a really, really long time. Because I started when I was like 10. And I remember I used to do weddings, and I remember being really nervous. And I would think, okay, just two more songs. And as time went on and I continued to sing in front of people, I became more comfortable. But then later, when I was singing professionally, I was like, oh no, this is really important. People are paying money and I have to be perfect. And so that caused me a lot of anxiety. And so I worked really, really hard practicing. Just as you were mentioning, with singing, you can't practice 5-6 hours a day. It's not possible because your chords just can't handle it, but you can practice mentally. And I practiced as much as I could with the songs that I had to learn, with the lyrics, trying to memorize them so that I would be perfectly prepared. And then I realized, okay, even that doesn't work if I'm really nervous about being perfect. You know what I mean? So what I learned in the early part of when I'd sing with symphonies, I realized, okay, it's kind of similar to what Henry was describing. I had terrible performance anxiety right before going on stage, and I realized that it was because I think I have to be perfect, and I'm not realizing that I'm actually one with all these people that I'm singing for. And if I think of it as, as a gift and not like, oh, I have to be perfect. Instead of thinking of it as, these people have come to enjoy themselves and maybe something that I say in my song will really touch them. Mm. If I think of it as a gift, then I can relax and just sing because I have practiced. I am prepared and I can just breathe and go and sing. Sometimes anxiety still, you know, creeps in, but in general, I'm able to breathe and let it go. It is challenging, I will say that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, what song are you going to play for us next?
This is You'll Never Walk Alone from Carousel. Both Henry and I have a love for... I'm not a technician, that's for sure, but with technology, I mean. But we both love Broadway, and this is a song that I just deeply love, and so that's what we're going to do.